2, The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Welcome to another show of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, the passionate show that makes you take control of your genes, helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. We can't make you do anything, but based on the information that you learn here, I'm sure you want to take control of your genes to become a world expert on your body. Welcome in. Dr. Mike's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I'm Joe Galewski. Thanks for listening today. To reach the show, it's 877-711-5211 or email, lots of emails, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs at gmail.com. Shall we begin, Dr. Mike? What do you think?
Absolutely, we should begin. We should say Bridget's here with us doing her nails.
I smell carcinogens in the air.
And getting yelled at for
it. There are carcinogens in the air, and she deserves to get yelled at. But it's safer doing it here, I figure, than she said the other place she does it is in her car when it stops at lights. So I figure it's safer here.
Yes, that is true. I'm not guilty of texting and driving, but painting my nails. And I must add,
Oh, I'm sorry I brought this up.
I'm not painting my nails. I painted them earlier, and I was only putting top coat on. I thought I could sneak it in as Dr. Roizen was checking his emails, and he looks up after like 1 minute and is like, what is that? I smell carcinogens.
As Dr. Mike would say, the use of top coat on a woman's nails, real age benefit, minus 5 years.
Especially, it has a secondhand effect for those of us in the room, too.
I'm willing to sacrifice 5 years for my nails to look this good.
You can smell that stuff, because I came into, my wife was in the family room earlier today and then left. And then after she left, I walked into the family room, and it was there. That smell was there. That stuff is strong.
Absolutely.
Top coat's not as strong.
Yeah, right.
What's in that gunk? What is in that gunk?
I'm trying to get her to read. Let me see the label. The label isn't probably very good. It says, Extra Life, no chip, no tip. And in very small letters, it contains ethyl acetate, butyl acetate, nitrocellulose, acid tributyline citrate. I can smell toluene in there, so I don't see where it says that, but I can smell it, which is obviously a carcinogen. Tocopherol, that's some vitamin E. She gets alcohol, isopropyl alcohol, acrylates, copalmate. It's got a bunch of junk in it, but I don't. It's got palmitate, which is of course great, because that's a palm oil, which probably doesn't get in you, obviously. It's just on the surface.
Yeah, it's just my nails.
Yeah, you just breathe it in.
What's the ingredient that makes it smell awful?
Toluene.
Yeah, that was what he said, that he could smell right away. He's like, I smell toluene.
Oh, yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard to smell. It's right. Deadly to a man.
Well, the color is mojito green from Essie. It's great if anyone would like to get it.
Deadly for a woman, too. Okay, let's go to something serious, Joe.
Yeah, let's talk about what we're guesting at 34 past the hour. We'll talk about innovative family farming with Dr. Daphne Miller. Her book is called Pharmacology, What Innovative Family Farming Can Teach Us About Health and Healing. She left her medical office and traveled to some family farms, very innovative family farms, to discover some of the connections between how we care for our bodies and how we grow our food. Now, this is kind of a good guest, because last week on the show, and by the way, if you miss an interview, you can go to radiomd.com and never miss an interview. But last week on the show, one of the topics was our meats could be rife with superbugs. And one of my suggestions was find a local farmer, and a farmer who doesn't use was it antibiotics? What is it that causes it, Dr. Mike?
It is antibiotics. Yeah. Right. It is antibiotics in the feed selects out bacteria in the organism that are resistant to those antibiotics, so that you then, when you get that food, you get antibiotics that are resistant to bacteria. Yeah. That are resistant to antibiotics.
Yeah, so that could be one way that you could prevent that problem that we talked about last week, superbugs in some of our meat. So that's our guest at 34 past the hour. What's Mayor Mike Bloomberg from New York City's next crusade?
Well, this one is a good one. I like it. It's to raise the age of people who can purchase cigarettes to 21. And the reason, of course, is that 80% of people who smoke start before, while they're in high school, before age 21. And if you can stop them from smoking or delay it, he hopes that it will radically decrease smoking rates, which will obviously make it more pleasant for everyone in New York who isn't a smoker. And there are 85% or 84% of the population is not smokers in New York. And secondly, it will lower the health care costs that is a burden to all of us. That is, health care costs are now crowding out Social Security, social programs, even defense. And if we don't get this right, if we don't change this, we will have rationing because we won't let crowd out defense for very long.
Okay, he's also asking city council there to pass a law that would mean nobody could charge less than $10.50 a pack for cigarettes, which would be designed to raise the price for some discount brands. The economic assumption, aside from the age requirement he talks about, the economic assumption is make something more expensive and people will buy less of it. What do you think about that concept?
Well, that is true. The elasticity on cigarettes is around 30%. So if you raise something by 100%, that is, you double its price, you decrease its use by 30%. So if it's now being used 15%, if you doubled its price, you would decrease that to 10%. And that's what's been shown over and over again with cigarettes, that the price elasticity is around what we call 30%, meaning a change in price one way or another gets the opposite change 30%.
Given the the undeniable health risk from smoking and the widespread public disapproval of smoking, this is probably likely to find more positive favor than the soda ban he's doing in New York City.
Yeah, well, it'll have a lot more positive effect from a cost standpoint. Just imagine, let's just say there are 10 million people in New York City and you got 5% of them to quit. That would be 500,000 people, you'd save $2,000 per person in shared medical costs, and it's probably a little higher in New York City, maybe 3,000, but let's use 2,000. In any case, you'd save $1 billion a year in medical costs that you could spend on other social programs and everything else.
How do you deal with the issue of the thriving black market for cigarettes then?
Oh, I don't know how you deal with that. I think what you want to do is to make it so undesirable to smoke that you wipe it out as a social habit over time, and that's what he's got to do. So, in other words, the people who smoke have to either be very wealthy and stupid or just stupid.
Just wonder, at what point does somebody say, yes, it is too expensive?
I agree. I agree with that, because if you're addicted, I feel like people will continue buying them and
could
then
be.
Take money from other places of the budget.
Yeah, I just worry. What would be that price that would say to people, I like smoking, but...
Well, there is, in fact, no price. That's why at the Cleveland Clinic we've said you can't have a job if you smoke. Job here, obviously. And what that does is it raises it to a very high price, right? No job.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why, in fact, we've decreased our smoking rates from about 15.4% to 6%. And the projection is that the current rate will go to 2% in the year 2020. Why do we think that's appropriate? It's because healthcare is crowding out social programs, education, Social Security, and even defense now. And unless we do something serious, we think it's unethical to encourage smoking.
All right, coming up, more of the top medical stories of the week. If you've got a question for Dr. Mike or a guest that we have on, it's udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com, or pick a phone up and call 877-711-5211. And another Real Age tip of the week from Dr. Mike will be coming up before the end of the hour. So stay with us, and thanks for listening. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.
You tune up your car and change the oil when it's running sluggish, right? Well, then how come when you're feeling low and sluggish, you aren't doing something about it? D-Herbs can help with their full body cleanse or dozens of other healthy, all-natural supplements and products. It's time to finally do something for you. Take a look at D-Herbs quality all-natural products, and you get a free gift, famous D-Herbs all-natural, all-herbal cleansing tea and an ebook with important life-changing information that you can download. It's called The Power of Cleansing. You can heal from any disease. Just go to freedherbs.com. That's free, the letter D, herbs.com, and claim your free herbal cleansing tea. You just pay a small shipping fee for that, and then you can download your free ebook on the wonders of healing cleansing. You'll also get a 15% off discount code if you should decide to make a purchase. Free gifts for you, plus a special gift of better health. freedherbs.com. freedherbs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody. So get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Yep. What'd you say?
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are Dr. Mike, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galuski.
Our show weekly brought to you by Morning Night Multivitamins and YouBeauty.com. You have a real age tip of the week planned for the end of the hour yet, Dr. Mike?
Absolutely. It is lose weight on a part-time diet.
Lose weight on a part-time diet. Okay.
Right. This is like Johnny Carson, the way you're saying that.
Oh, so, like Karnak.
Yes.
Like Ed McMahon.
Yes. So I should say, that's right. Lose weight on a part-time diet.
Well, let's segue into the story this week, medical story this week, that has kind of a connection to the, this. How long do you have to exercise to work something off in terms of what you eat?
Well, in fact, this is a study of students in a high school where they had three groups. One group saw the calories, one group saw nothing but the food, and the other group saw the calories and how long they'd have to exercise to work it off. The group that saw the calories alone did not change their eating habits or did not change the number of calories they purchased. But the group that saw how much they had to exercise decreased their calories in their food. That is, they chose food with many fewer calories, and they did it consistently. So the answer was, I think it was about 25% fewer calories. So the message is putting caloric information in context, meaning the context of how long you have to exercise, would decrease the amount of calories that people eat and may decrease obesity. The interesting thing, I made a mistake. It was at Texas Christian University, and it was 300 students at the university. There was a December 2011 study that found the same thing with soft drinks. That is, when they saw how long they would have to exercise, they went away from the caloric soft drinks.
I bet you it opens eyes up, doesn't it? Do you have an example of how long it would take to exercise to burn off something? For example, I don't know, do you have something? It's a lot of hours or a lot of exercise to burn off.
Well, let's just say there's a Big Mac, fries, a soda, which is, I think, 1,200 calories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that would take you 2 hours on a treadmill at almost a maximum treadmill for 2 hours. That is 10 calories a minute for 2 hours is as though you're at 3.3 miles per hour at 15 degrees.
Mm.
So if you're the average 70-kilogram bear. So that's 2 hours of full exercise. Now let's do something. Let's just say it's walking. It's 4 hours of walking.
Wow.
So you'd have to walk continually for 4 hours at an average pace of 3.3 miles per hour on a flat to, in fact, walk off that 1,200 calories of the full Big Mac, large fries, and Big Cola.
So if you had that meal you just talked about and you didn't exercise, what happens?
You gained weight. Well, there are three things. Food is more than calories. So it is also that saturated fat and the red meat and the saturated fat and the fries turns on genes that cause inflammation in your body. Secondly, if you don't exercise, don't use up the calories, the excess glucose. So during that period of time, you'll normally lose, if you're awake, you'll normally use, if you're awake, a calorie and a half a minute. So let's just say you're a calorie and a half, you're on the couch, you're watching TV, but you're not asleep, you're actively changing channels pretty often. So that's 90 calories. So you will have used 360 calories by the end of the 4 hours when you're ready to eat again. That 360 calories means that roughly 850 calories is left, and you'll store those in your fat cells.
I read one of your Facebook entries a day or two ago talking about it's even a good thing to do chores and run errands. That helps with exercise, too.
Absolutely.
Are
you enjoying that? I mean, I'm doing more and more Facebooking and tweeting. And we have, anyone wants to follow, of course, there's 6,000. I have only about 6,000 tweet followers, so I'm welcoming more as opposed to Dr. Oz's 16 million.
I'm never more than a Facebook entry away from you.
He says 6,000 like it's such a little number. Like, that's a lot of people.
Nowhere near mine. By the way.
How many do you have, Joe?
Friends?
Yeah. On Twitter. Twitter followers. You probably should have about 10 million.
10 million, yes. 10 million.
You're on every morning, right? You got the morning show. You got a big audience. You're the biggest audience.
Oh, it's big. It's big. It's big. It's huge.
I probably come in way above both of you at 130 followers.
130 followers.
You're probably going to tweet about your fingernails, too, probably.
Please, hey, Joe, I tweet about much more important things.
By the way, Twinkies, Ho-Hos, and Ding Dongs will be back in July.
Really good for business at the Cleveland Clinic and bad for the United States.
Well, I mean, it does
add. I look at Mike Simon, who's the king of bacon cooking, as a provider of patients to the Cleveland Clinic, because obviously that generates TMAO, which is what we're going to talk about another story. And that TMAO causes inflammation in your arteries, which, of course, causes heart attacks, strokes, memory loss. Also, for women, causes wrinkles. So even if you're young, you shouldn't have bacon because it causes wrinkles. And for guys, it causes impotence. And for both genders, it causes decay in orgasm quality. So obviously, anyone who wants to not enjoy sex, just keep eating bacon.
Those Twinkies, 1,500 new jobs. They'll hire 1,500 new people.
Oh, yeah, and they'll cause a lot more because each Twinkie is probably responsible for, you know, half of a cardiac operation, which is another 10 jobs. So it's got a lot. If you have a half a Twinkie a day, you probably have half of a cardiac operation by the time you're 50. So it's got a lot of downstream revenue increases for hospitals. Obviously, that detracts. We're at the point where the medical costs are now crowding out Social Security, crowding out social programs, and crowding out even our defense. So we need to not eat as though no one else is dependent on our eating.
Actually, there's probably no need for new Twinkies because I had one last week that was made during the Revolutionary War, and it was still very tasty.
I don't doubt it.
Still very, very delicious. We got a minute. Your Cleveland Clinic says they have a new treatment for migraine sufferers. It's an electrical skin patch, right?
Right. Well, this is a patch, and in fact, it's put over the ganglion, a specific ganglion, and then you stimulate it like you would turn on a TV or turn on your phone, and it generates a wave to that ganglion, and it turns off your migraine. Don't know. We rated it. It is incredibly effective, 90-some percent effective against tension headaches. They're just now studying how effective it is against migraine, but it looks promising. And we rated it because we knew the data a little bit in advance. We rated it as probably one of the top 10 medical breakthroughs of this year. So instead of having to take migraine pills, you just put on the patch and stimulate yourself.
Right. They say it's an alternative to pills or nasal sprays or injections. This will be the first time it'll be used as a patch. Not necessarily fast-acting, but takes up to 2 hours before the pain is gone, but I guess very effective of getting rid of nausea. And the FDA says the migraine patch will be available probably by the end of the year, and that comes out of the Cleveland Clinic, as Dr. Mike said. Guest time next, pharmacology, what innovative family farming can teach us about health and healing. It's the second appearance on the show for Dr. Daphne Miller, and she's next on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
I am a face of influenza.
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 We all are faces of influenza.
I'm a mom. And I'm a face of influenza. Health officials now recommend everyone 6 months of age and older get immunized against influenza this
and every year.
Vaccination is safe and is the best way to help protect yourself and your family from contracting and spreading the flu.
We all are faces of influenza.
See your healthcare provider about getting immunized. The American Lung Association urges everyone 6 months of age and older, and we mean everyone, to get vaccinated. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza is serious. So are we. Get vaccinated.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Snowboarding is a popular winter sport. Snowboards look like big skateboards made from fiberglass and plastic. Snowboarders ride their boards much the way surfers do, steering by shifting their body weight. Most can reach speeds up to 40 miles per hour. Twice as many injuries happen to snowboarders as skiers. The most common injuries are to the wrist, usually when snowboarders use their arms to break a fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend this sport for children under age 7. For older children, make sure the snowboard fits the child. An easy way to determine this is to make sure the board stands no higher than the child's nose. Children should always wear helmets and gloves with built-in wrist guards, and they should resist trying advanced stunts or dangerous tricks until they've mastered all the basic snowboarding skills. And for more information on your child's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
And now back to Dr. Michael Roizen, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galewski on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip in about 15 minutes for the hour. Stick around for that. udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. What can farming teach a family doctor about the art and science of medicine? Dr. Daphne Miller left her practice for a bit, traveled to some innovative family farms around the country, and looking to discover the hidden connections between how we care for our bodies and how we grow our food. Her book is called Pharmacology, What Innovative Family Farming Can Teach Us About Health and Healing. It's published by William Morrow. That's a division of HarperCollins. Well, thanks for coming on. It's kind of interesting. Before I send you to Dr. Mike, you wanted to find out how good farming teaches us about nurturing ourselves. Good farming is, what is good farming as opposed to bad farming?
Well, that's a great question, and good farming is farming that actually treats the land very much the way that we would nurture our bodies if we were taking good care of our bodies, and that's actually what I discovered. But good farming is sustainable farming. It's farming that preserves the soil and all the microbes in the soil and returns the nutrients that you take from the soil back to it in the form of organic matter so that you can grow healthy food and healthy animals and healthy people.
Is most farming done that way in this country?
Sadly, no. Most farming in this country is not done that way. Most farming in this country is done with a lot of external chemicals and fertilizers and pesticides and with churning up the soil and using seeds that are not well intended for that land, and without conserving water and all those things. I think that's what we would probably call industrial farming. And much of our food in this country is produced through bad farming.
All right, let's
get
into
that. That's not the kind of farming I went to learn from.
Right, okay, we'll find out. Let's find out more about what you learned in pharmacology and more of the book and the topic. And here's Dr. Mike.
You know, Daphne, thank you for being on. And I've got to tell you, there's a picture on the cover of the book of a carrot, which is probably the most sexually suggestive carrot I've ever seen.
It's also supposed to look like one of those old medicine poles, you know.
Oh, is that what,
you know,
is that what it
going
is?
Around the cane. So, it's sort of different things to different people. Some people see it as connectivity.
Now, one of the, we should tell people so that you should get the book. It's a wonderfully written book. But it is, and it's not it's a fun book to read, not a didactic book. So the lessons are subtle rather than hit you in the face. But
they seep in.
But this is carrot, what do you call them? Two carrots intertwined, I suppose you'd say. Now one of the stories I loved was, it starts out with this crazy picture about the Garden of Happiness. Talk to us about the Garden of Happiness.
Well, each chapter in the book takes place on a really different kind of family farm in a different part of the country. And the one you're referring to takes place in the Bronx. And it's actually it's a farm that's made up of many community gardens. But the gardeners there consider themselves a farm. It's part of La Familia Verde Farming Network. And I went there specifically because I was really curious to see the role that urban farming plays in the health of a community. And while I was there, I made some interesting discoveries.
Well, now I'm going to make you tell us some of them. But one of them you told us about a guy who moved from, I think it was South Carolina. This is problematic. I read it 2 days ago. So this is a guy who moved from someplace in the South on a farm to the Bronx, vowing never to go back to a farm. And then he went back to a farm. And you talk about all the lessons from it.
Yeah, well, it was very interesting because he was an elderly man and he'd had another job and he'd gone to college. And when he was young, he grew up on a farm and worked really hard, you know, backbreaking labor on the farm. And so when he left his farm in South Carolina to come and move to New York City and go to college and become a professional, he said, I will never go back to the farm. And then as he got older and he was living in the Bronx, he started to discover that these community gardens were a wonderful way for him to connect back with his community. And as he went out and started gardening or farming again, he realized that he had these terrific skills, these farming skills, things that he had not thought were very valuable when he was a young man heading off to college. But now all these other people in his community were wanting to learn from him. How do you grow those carrots? What do you do to make your beans so look so lively? And it was a way for him to pass knowledge on to other members of the community, both young and old. And he also realized that it was like going to the gym every day. Here he could go outside, dig in the dirt, and get really physically fit. And he didn't have to pay for a gym membership, didn't have to be stuck indoors. And he had delicious food at the end of the day, so it had that benefit as well. And that's just one of the many health benefits that I saw of urban farming that was not necessarily directly related to the nutrients in the food, but was some other kickback that you got for being outside and in the garden.
So, in fact, he got a number of kickbacks, as you describe, but one is he was regarded as a wise elder statesman, so he got that, if you will, the ability to connect with others and be regarded as and have respect. Second, he got to talk with a lot of people. Third, he got the physical activity. So he got stress relief, he got physical activity, he got a lot of benefits from it.
Yeah, and actually, there's an interesting study that came out not long ago looking at elderly people who do this kind of skills with these kinds of skills with their hands, where they're balancing on one foot as they're mastering the hoe and sort of planting all these different things in the garden, that it actually has a mental or cognitive benefit as well. So it turns out that gardening is also a dementia fighter.
That's correct. Now the dementia fighting capabilities. Let's go to another subject if I can, rather than going to this, because I think it's such an interesting story about all the benefits of this urban farm. When we went, we started a farmer's market back in 2007 in the Cleveland Clinic, or 2008, I can't remember which year, but we were told how poorly they did on hospital grounds, and we did a whole bunch of things to encourage them. But one of the things we did, which you say is also done at that farm, was in fact collect or allow the farmers learned how to take SNAP and WIC tickets, which is now more common, but didn't used to be done in that era. The other component we did is we tried to turn, and we turned two of our old parking lots that were ground parking lots, reconditioned the land and put them into farms for a couple of the under or unemployed people in the neighborhood after they went to Ohio State Extension to learn how to farm. And one of the things that was amazing to me is how expensive it is to recondition land once it's contaminated.
Oh, so yeah, it sounds like what you did was actually pull up the tarmac. In a lot of farming areas, what they'll do in the city is actually just build boxes and bring in soil so that they can circumvent that problem. Although I have to say, I was amazed because there was another farm that's the farm that I opened the chapter with. It's called the Finca del Sur, and it's a little further down south in the Bronx as compared to the La Familia network. And they just recently took over that land and started to farm, and it's got Grand Concourse on one side, it's got Metro North on the other, and it's got highway and subway coming, and subway vents coming right through it. So you would think that this would be a nasty piece of urban land to farm on. And when they came in and did soil testing, they actually found that the soil was shockingly healthy.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about pharmacology, pharmacology, by Daphne Miller. Joe?
All right, Dr. Mike, thank you very much. youdocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Your emails for our guest or Dr. Mike anytime. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start insures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at greatstartgtl.com. That's greatstartgtl.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to greatstartgtl.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now.
The words you say to her today.
Can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. While planning gifts for your children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews this holiday season, don't forget about toy safety. Toys need to match a child's abilities, so always check the manufacturer's age recommendations on the toy first. In general, toy parts should be much larger than the child's mouth to prevent injuries, including choking. To avoid serious eye or ear injuries, steer clear of toys that shoot small objects into the air or make loud noises. The eyes, nose, and other small parts on soft toys and stuffed animals should be securely fastened. If a toy comes with instructions, make sure you read and demonstrate them to the child and make sure she understands the proper way to use the toy. And note, never buy hobby kits such as chemistry sets for any child younger than 12. For more tips on keeping your holidays safe with your children and family, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Joe Galuski and Dr. Deb Lonser, and starring Dr. Michael Roizen, M.D.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip, in about 5 minutes, Dr. Daphne Miller's book is called Pharmacology, What Innovative Family Farming Can Teach Us About Health and Healing. Pharmacology spelled with an F, not a P-H, F, pharmacology. Here again is Dr. Mike Roizen.
Daphne, now when we were talking about the quality of the land and the redoing urban farms, how expensive is it to test, for example, a garden that you want to grow in either as a community or a group to see if you can do this and get all the lessons?
Well, that's a great question, and I have to be honest, I haven't been asked that before. But from talking to farmers, my understanding is that it's actually not a cheap proposition, but it's cheaper than trying to test our own bodies. So cheaper than the human labs, but not absolutely free. But, you know, in another chapter in pharmacology, the first chapter is actually an exploration of how a farmer's effort to rejuvenate his soil can teach us incredible lessons about rejuvenating ourselves. And it's a farmer who does precisely that. He does a lot of testing and then replacing of minerals in order to bring his land in Washington State up to what he would consider to be healthy soil. And he does this for several years, sending tests to the lab and then dumping minerals back into the soil. And he's realizing that his land isn't getting that much better, and his vegetables aren't looking that much better. And he's kind of starting to worry about all the minerals that he's dumping on there. And so he takes a totally different approach, where he starts to farm in this full cycle way, where he's putting the organic matter back into the soil and not over-tilling the land, and farming with animals who take using their manure to nourish the soil, and really trying to support all the microbes, the healthy bugs in the soil. And all of a sudden, his land starts to thrive and his vegetables start to thrive. And so he realizes that testing and replacing doesn't quite work. And as I'm with him, I realize that there are many times with my patients where there's the same issue that goes on, where we tend to sort of, people come in and they're fatigued and depleted, and we run a million tests, and we don't really come up with much, but we find, oh, they're missing a little vitamin D or a little bit of iron or this and that, and we tend to replace them with minerals and drugs and so on, just like this farmer was doing with the soil. And oftentimes, they too don't really get better. So in the chapter, I start to explore what happens to our bodies when we become part of a healthy farm cycle, when we start to eat the food from land that has been well-nourished. And I spend time with microbiologists and different kinds of scientists exploring this and find out that indeed, even though there's not a lot of research on it, with those kinds of healthy foods that have been exposed to healthy microbes, starts to have a very positive influence on our health and our metabolism and our immunity as well. So we really can thrive by being part of a healthy farm cycle.
Bridget, do you have anything you'd like to... You look like you're burning for a question, so...
Yes, Dr. Miller, I loved the entire idea of your book. I think that it's amazing, and I'm...
We should say the book is Pharmacology with a F, rather than a PH, so it's Pharmacology. It's on Amazon now, and the website is www.drdaphne.com.
And I love how you explored so many different things and then brought it all back to different things that your patients were struggling with. So I'm coming from my own personal interest in public health nutrition, which I'm getting my master's in currently. And I thought it was so interesting in part of your book that you talked about how gardening can increase people's consumption of fruits and vegetables way more efficiently than any major supermarket. And why, I think that you hit the nail right on the head, but from your own personal experience of being to all these farms and talking to so many people, like, why do you think that that is?
That's a wonderful question. And as you can tell from reading that chapter, that realization caught me off guard. Like, I had always assumed that, food deserts could be fixed by bringing in a bunch of supermarkets.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look at the data, and it's not promising. And, I have a lot of different theories about why that could be the case. One of them is that supermarkets, even though they do have fruits and vegetables, they have all that other tempting stuff that's not good for us as well. The aisles of candy, the aisles of processed stuff, the chips,
right,
the checkout aisles, in the checkout area where you can, get your Snickers bar on the way out. And so what ends up happening is you might pick up a piece of kale or a bunch of carrots, but you're going to get all that other food that's going to sort of far outweigh it. And then I joke in the book, might even crush it in the bottom of the cart. And when you start to get involved with farms and see how food is grown and get connected to the whole process, I think that even things that weren't interesting or appealing or delicious to you before become interesting because, A, they're fresher and tastier. I mean, a carrot that's directly from the earth tastes completely different from a carrot that's, been grown somewhere in the Midwest, sat in a packing crate, was shipped to somewhere else, repackaged, put in a bag, and finally made it to you, wherever you live. And it really loses a lot of flavor along the way. And also those foods that were meant for transportation and commercial use tend to be grown from a seed that's less tasty. That's a whole other story. But I think the bottom line is that farming and gardening puts you really in contact with the earth in a very, very fundamental way. And we see that with children in schools as well. When children have gardens in their schools, they go home and start telling their parents about weird plants like sorrel that they want to eat. They start demanding daikon radishes. Kids that you couldn't even get to eat something green before.
Right. That's so true. I nanny for a family, and we go to this place in Maine, and they hate fruits and vegetables, but the place that we stay in Maine has a garden, and it's the only place that I ever see them eat fruits and vegetables. So all the things that you talked about were definitely true. So I was also curious, which was your favorite farm?
Oh, they were all, for me, amazing and eye-opening. And it's really hard for me to pinpoint one. I mean, the first one that I did my internship on was Jubilee, which was that biodynamic vegetable farm in Washington State where the farmer taught me about rejuvenation.
Dr. Daphne, we're going to have to cut it off here
okay. And
go to the tip of the week, the website, www.drdaphne.com. The book, Pharmacology, F-A-R-M-A, whatever the rest of it is, C-O-L-O-G-Y, Pharmacology, but it's with an F, not a P-H. Joe?
I don't know what to do, Mike. We're about ready to end the hour here. If you want to quickly, in 30 seconds, give us a quick tip.
Lose weight on a part-time diet. Part-time diets take time. You can't expect to lose 5 pounds in a week. You don't want to anyway. But part-time diets mean that you do it 2 days a week and eat regularly the rest of the week. It seems to work. We'll do it more next week. We'll get the full Real Age Tip of the Week next week.
And this is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.
You tune up your car and change the oil when it's running sluggish, right? Well, then how come when you're feeling low and sluggish, you aren't doing something about it? D-Herbs can help with their full body cleanse or dozens of other healthy, all-natural supplements and products. It's time to finally do something for you. Take a look at D-Herbs quality all-natural products, and you get a free gift, famous D-Herbs all-natural, all-herbal cleansing tea and an ebook with important life-changing information that you can download. It's called The Power of Cleansing. You can heal from any disease. Just go to freedherbs.com. That's free, the letter D, herbs.com, and claim your free herbal cleansing tea. You just pay a small shipping fee for that, and then you can download your free ebook on the wonders of healing cleansing. You'll also get a 15% off discount code if you should decide to make a purchase. Free gifts for you, plus a special gift of better health. freedherbs.com. freedherbs.com.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.